So if you want to turn then to 2 Chronicles, where we read earlier on, 2 Chronicles chapters 14 and 16. 14 to 16. So when you read the kings in these books and in the books of kings, then in the Old Testament, I guess you might think of them in terms of goodies and baddies. There were good kings and there were bad kings. And you read through and you try and think, well, I place him in the good king category and I place him in the bad king category. And that reflects a tendency that perhaps we all have when we look at other people. And there's a rightness in that, isn't there? Fundamentally, we know that mankind is divided into those who are going to heaven and those who are going to hell. It is divided into the good and the bad in that most important sense, that there is no third alternative. But at the same time, of course, our tendency to divide the kings into goodies and baddies flattens out or removes then the annoyance, the detail that the scriptures give us, because the kings aren't simply good kings and bad kings, are they? There are kings who serve the Lord better, and there are kings who serve the Lord worse. Solomon would be the one we would probably most easily remember as a king who let the Lord down so badly in his latter years. But then when you read, there were other kings with whom we have more annoyance, aren't you? You have Rehoboam, who was that weak king, easily swayed in his opinions. Whoever came along, the young men and then the old men, would change his views. He was a feeble and weak leader. Or we have Asa then, of whom we've read this morning. He would then, in that simple way, be placed in the category of a good king, wouldn't he? We read in chapter 15 that Asa then was faithful to the Lord all his life. And we read at the end of chapter 16 of the way in which he was honoured at the end because he was regarded then as a good king. But on the other hand, the prophet, the chronicler writing this book, wants us to see that there's more to the life of King Asa than simply saying he was a good king. Because what we find as we read these chapters in Chronicles is that Asa was a king who began well, but ended badly. He was a king who started his service of the Lord really well, and who finished really badly. And that then isn't my view, as it were. It's the way that the chronicler carefully lays out these chapters for us. If you look at 1 Kings 15, there's much less on the life of King Asa. And there's a lot of it, of course, in common. But there's nothing about these two prophets that we read of in the book of Chronicles. And there's nothing about this war with the Ethiopians in the book of Kings. And that's because the chronicler chooses to place them here for his purpose of showing us how the life of Asa unfolded, how it began well and ended badly. So that where we read in chapter 14, then it opens then with these verses about the good service of Asa, doesn't it? The first half opens then with that good service and the blessings of peace and prosperity that Asa and his people enjoyed at the beginning of chapter 14. But at the end of chapter 16, we read the opposite. We read of Asa's disobedience, his wickedness, and his cursing, him being cursed, and that he had this horrible disease in his legs from which he died. And then, as the beginning of his life continues in chapter 14, then we have this war against the Ethiopians, in which he's victorious, followed by a prophet commending him, praising him, followed by more zealous obedience from Asa. But in contrast, in chapter 16, we have a war where Asa fails, where he's rebuked by a prophet, and where he responds to that rebuke with even more evil behaviour. There is this contrast then that the prophet writing this material sets up for us. Let's then think a little more detail about this contrast then that the prophet sets before us, how he began well and ended badly. So in chapters 14 and 15 we have his good beginning. We have then, as I said, his religious reforms. He begins well in chapter 14. He takes over from his father Abijah to become that fifth king in about 910 BC as we have it. And we read in verse 2, he did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God. And how did he do what was good and right? Well, the prophet tells us he took away the foreign altars and the high places. He broke down the pillars and cut down the Asherim. And he commanded Judah to seek the Lord. He set a fine example and he commanded the people to follow his examples. And he destroyed the high places and the incense altars. And he built these fortified cities. And the Lord blessed him, didn't he? The Lord gave him peace, we read. He had no war, we read in verse 6. He had no war, for the Lord gave him peace. And in verse 7 again, we read, he sought the Lord, and the Lord gave him peace on every side. And so he built up cities, and he prospered. There was peace and prosperity in the land under the faithful, good service of King Asa. And then we have an example of his good service and his success in the Lord's service from verse 9 to the end of chapter 14, when this Zerah, the Ethiopian, comes out with this huge army. So he's come up from roughly where Sudan and Ethiopia are today in northeast Africa. He's come up round through Egypt into the land of Israel with this huge army. He's besieged and conquered parts of the southern kingdom. And then Asa sets out with his huge army to meet him. He goes to meet him at a place called Marishah, which was southwest of Jerusalem. So Asa's coming down with his army from the north towards the Ethiopian army coming up from the south. And of course, Asa and his army completely destroys, annihilates, by the Lord's grace, the Ethiopian army. As we read, they attack them, they drive them back, and they take all this plunder that we read of with their great victory towards the end of chapter 14. We read then all the plunder being taken. And they return to Jerusalem, and this man, this prophet of God, Azariah, the son of Oded, he comes and he speaks to Asa and his army. He goes out to meet him and he praises him. He says that he's done well, the Lord has been with him, and so on. And that they've sought the Lord, and they've broken the other army. And so he says at the end of his speech, as we have it in verse 7, take courage, Asa, take courage. You know, you've done well, let your hands not be weak, be strong, take courage. And we read then in verse 8, Asa then took courage and engaged in more religious reforms, more obedience to the Lord. He not only seeks to cleanse further idolatrous altars and so on from the land, but he gathers the people then in this worship where they offer all these, this huge number of sacrifices we read of to the Lord. And they swear an oath to the Lord and make a covenant to the Lord as they commit themselves to the Lord together. And Asa now even has the courage to dethrone and get rid of this evil woman Maacah, his grandmother, who seems to have been a powerful woman. Now she's driven out as he cleanses the land of the idolatry that was associated with her and her followers. So this is Asa then, zealous in the Lord's service. He began so well. But then in chapter 16, we see the change. In the 36th year then, we read then that he has another war to take on. He has another army who comes about him. This time, it is the army from Israel. The king there, Baasha, the king of Israel then, comes south to attack Judah. And he conquers some of the northern parts of Judah and he builds up Ramah, which was in the north. And that was a key strategic route by which trade passed through Israel down to Egypt and so on and round to the Golden Crescent in Babylon and so on. So it's a key strategic place and he conquers this. And what's Asa's response? Where we read, he takes silver and gold from the treasures of the house of the Lord and from his own palace to offer an enormous bribe to the king of Syria. So Syria then further north of Israel, and its king Ben-Hadad is offered this enormous bribe if he will come from the north and attack Israel so that Baasha will have to withdraw. And that's what happens, as we read then. Baasha has to withdraw and abandon his conquests and head to try and drive away Ben-Hadad. And so Asa and his people are able then to go up and reconquer the land and reclaim it and take everything that's left behind and so on. And you might think, well, didn't that go well? Why is the preacher telling me this was a bad thing? This was a clever political move, wasn't it? Here's a man who thought through, no, I don't need to have war. I can keep my people out of war. I can just pay somebody else to do the fighting from me. I'll take this money for me. I'll take this money and I'll offer it to Ben-Hadad, and his army can do all the fighting. It's great to be able to avoid war. This is a clever strategy, isn't it? It's the kind of thing we're used to politicians engaging in, isn't it? When we think, oh, great, they've kept people out of war because they've done this deal. So he does this deal with the king of Syria. And the reason I say it was a bad thing is because of what the Lord says about this. From verse 7 of chapter 16, he sends this other prophet, Hanani the seer, and he comes to Asa. So the other prophet, Azariah, had, remember, praised him for his victory. But this man says, no. You relied on the king of Assyria and did not rely on the Lord your God. Were not the Ethiopians and the Libyans a huge army with many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he gave them into your hand, and so on. So he tells him off. He rebukes him. The Lord is not impressed. In fact, he says, I would have given you another great victory. In verse 7 we read the prophet Hanani saying to Asa, the army of the king of Syria has escaped you. That might seem a bit odd, mightn't it? The army of the king of Syria. But what he's saying is, if you had not cut your deal politically with the king of Syria and instead done as you ought to have done, like you did with the Ethiopians, and gone out to fight against Baasha and Israel, you would not only have conquered and overrun Israel to the north, you would have gone and conquered Syria and destroyed Ben-Hadad and Syria as well. You've let the Syrians escape, he says. The implication is clearly he would have got there to conquer Israel as well. It's like in the time past in this country. If you were going to go and beat all those northern Scots rebelling in the Highlands again against England, then necessarily you had to conquer the southern lowlands of Scotland again as well in order to do it. You couldn't go and drive out the Highlanders in the Highlands and Islands and beat them from England without first subduing the land in between. And they needed to subdue the land in between in order to destroy Syria. And had Asa served as he began in his reign so well, if he continued well, the prophet says you would have had this blessing. And what's the response then of Asa to the prophet? Remember, he took courage previously when the prophet Azariah encouraged him. Well, sadly, we read the tragic words of verse 10. Asa was angry with the seer and put him in the stocks in prison, for he was in a rage with him because of this. And Asa inflicted cruelties upon some of the people at the same time, almost certainly people who were faithful, like the prophet Hanani. They were faithful to the Lord. And Asa turns on these faithful servants of the Lord, Hanani and so on, and he persecutes them, he imprisons and cruelly treats these men and women. And the result then, instead of being further blessing, as he had when he was doing well, is this cursing in the Bible. If you get a disease after you've behaved badly in the text like this, that is a curse from the Lord. He's cursed with this disease in his legs, probably gangrene, becomes severe, and he seems to have died from this horrible disease in his legs. So Asa then, you can see, he was a king then, who began well, but ended badly, so tragically. So what went wrong What went wrong with Asa? Now you might think I've answered that question in what I've said. But I think we can do a little more. We can dig a little deeper here, can't we, and see. I want you first of all to notice the presence and absence of the Lord. The presence and the absence of the Lord. I don't mean he's not present really, but I mean presence or absence in the life and the thinking and the behaviour of Asa and thus Asa's people. So when Asa's doing well and serving the Lord in chapters 14 and 15, we read then again of him speaking of the Lord. The Lord is on his lips, he's in his mouth. Chapter 14, verse 4. He commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to keep the law and his commandments. Verse 7 in chapter 14. So he says to Judah, the land is still ours because we've sought the Lord our God. Verse 11 of chapter 14. Asa cried to the Lord his God. O Lord, there is none like you to help. And then again, help us, O Lord our God. And again, O Lord, you are our God. Let not man prevail against you. And in chapter 15, Asa again and the people then, we read then, Asa repairs the altar of the Lord in front of the vestibule of the house of the Lord. In verse 9 we read that then all the people under Asa's inspiration saw that the Lord his God was with King Asa. And verse 12, and the people with Asa enter into a covenant to seek the Lord, their God of their fathers. And they swore an oath to the Lord in verse 14. So we see again and again then, the Lord is in on the lips, he's in the mouth of Asa, because he's in the mind, he's in the thinking of Asa, isn't he? And as a result, he's in the mind, the thinking and the behaviour of Asa and the people. But read chapter 16, and Asa says not a word about the Lord. There's nothing about the Lord. I can't read you because there's nothing to read in chapter 16 about Asa and the Lord. The Lord is no longer on his lips. He's not in his heart. He's not in his thinking in chapter 16. And related to this then, we have key language that's used by this prophet writing these books. A phrase that he uses is seeking the Lord. Seeking or sought. Seeking the Lord. One Chronicles chapter 28 and verse 9 basically defines it in relation to Solomon. That seeking the Lord then is this wholehearted devotion to the Lord. To seek the Lord for the chronicler is not a single act. It's not, I sought the Lord today or this morning or when I did this thing. It is a whole life commitment to serving the Lord in the mind of the chronicler. In his book, throughout his book, or two books as we have it, he uses this phrase, seeking or sought the Lord. And so we read it 11 times in these chapters about the life of King Asa. We read it 10 times in chapters 14 and 15 when Asa is doing well then. So again, we've read some of them already, but it's just to notice this particular phrase in verse 4 of chapter 14, Asa to seek the Lord. And verse 7, again, we have sought the Lord our God. We have sought him, and he has given us peace on every side. And as we carry on into chapter 15, we have this language then in verse 2, this time, of course, from the mouth of the prophet, encouraging Asa to be a man then who seeks the Lord. If you seek him, he will be found by you. And verse 4 then, they sought him. So these are people in the past who sought the Lord, and it exhorts Asa to do the same. And so as we read on in verse 12 of chapter 15, we read, the people then entered into a covenant to seek the Lord their God. And verse 15, they all then sought the Lord, sought him with their whole desire, with their whole heart. So we have again and again this language. I haven't given you every example of seeking the Lord. The Lord's in his mind and he's committed wholeheartedly to seeking, that is to serving the Lord with all his heart and mind and soul and strength. There's Asa doing well. You can see the detail here in the text. The Lord is in his mind, he's on his lips, he's in his heart, he's committed to the Lord. Chapter 16, we have one use of this phrase about seeking or sought the Lord. It's in verse 12. We towards the end of verse 12 of Asa, even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord. He did not seek the Lord. So you can see the contrast then between Asa doing well, chapters 14 and 15, beginning well and ending badly. And we're given two specific examples, aren't we, in chapter 16 of this failure of Asa to think about and to seek the Lord. The first, as we've touched on, was his way in which he looked to the king of Syria. And he's rebuked, as we've seen in verse 7, by Hanani the seer. Because you relied on the king of Syria and did not rely on the Lord your God. So he's not seeking, he's not relying, he's not looking to the Lord, he's looking to human means only. He's looking to human agency. He's looking to his own schemes and political plans and so on, and not seeking the Lord. And the second example then is with this disease in his legs, which kills him in verse 12, where we read, even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord, but sought help from the physicians. There's nothing wrong with seeking help from doctors, good people, I think, but I'm biased. Good to seek help from physicians, but not without also seeking help from the Lord. His failure was not seeking help from the physicians, it was seeking help from the Lord, not seeking help from the Lord, but only seeking help from the physicians. It's clear they're both and. He should have sought the Lord and looked for medical help, but he didn't. He only looked for human help. Again, just he's only looked for human help and human schemes and human approaches to things with his war against Israel by bribing King of Syria. He only looks to the physicians. He does not look to the Lord. So these examples then are showing us in these examples of his failure to seek the Lord. So he began well. The Lord's in his mind. He's in his heart. He's seeking him again and again, year in, year out. But then he ends badly because he's no longer seeking the Lord. The Lord is no longer in his heart and less on his lips and in his mouth. So that's Asa. He began well, ended badly. And you might think, well, is that it? I mean, you're just saying, keep trusting the Lord. Asa failed to keep trusting the Lord. And in a nutshell, I guess that's it. I mean, I guess that we often want something more than that, don't we? Some technique, some plan, some scheme, some way in which we can somehow do something better or more spectacular, some way in which we can do something special. But the lesson, I think, from the life of King Asa is keep plodding on. I was put in mind of the famous William Carey's response when asked about his struggles and how he kept going. And it's on the EMF, I notice it's on this month's EMF booklet. This quote from William Carey. So William Carey was a Baptist missionary to what we now call India. And he served the Lord through difficult circumstances year in and year out. And somebody asked him then, how do you manage all this? And he replied, I can plot. I can plot. Nothing greater, nothing more spectacular, nothing more arresting. I can plot. Asa didn't plot. He didn't keep going, did he? He didn't keep on keeping on. He didn't keep up service to the end in the way he had at the beginning. And when we think then of persevering as Christian men and women, I think we often think then in terms of persecution, don't we? We think in terms of people opposing us in the gospel and trying to undermine us. And we think of Satan's schemes and the way in which he tries to derail us and ruin our service to the Lord. And that is right. Those things are true. We need to be wary of them. But Asa didn't fail for any of those reasons. The army of Baasha, the king of Israel, was far more feeble and weak than the massive million-man army he defeated from Ethiopia. There was no particular problems, no persecution, no reason why he should have failed. He just didn't keep going. He didn't keep seeking the Lord. And that's what we all need to do in the Lord's service. There's no magic solution. There's no special technique. We need to be those who every morning again get up and we labour in prayer and we seek the Lord in prayer faithfully, day in and day out. And week in and week out, we gather in worship morning and evening on the Lord's day, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out. Keep plodding on. Keep going faithfully, doing the simple things again and again. We need to be those who every day keep fighting against the same besetting sins, keep resisting the same temptations, plodding on, doing the same things day after day, year after year, decade after decade, because that's what life is like in a fallen world. Asa began well, but he ended badly. May the Lord give us grace to begin well and end well. Amen.